Thank you all for coming today. We're very excited to have you here. We have a wonderful evening planned for you. It's a beautiful night outside, and you could be all being active outside riding, but no, you would of course be active riding bikes and walking and strolling and getting ice cream maybe. Ice cream, exactly. So tonight's activity, we're going to be learning a lot about health and losing weight and fitness, what our personal experiences have been, and then what is the science showing us? What are smart, safe ways to lose weight and keep it off healthfully? What type of healthy commitments do we need to make to keep ourselves in as best physical and mental shape as possible? The library has a summer reading thing this year of local motion. So the library itself is promoting health, our mental health of reading and enjoying things here at the library, as well as having different programs that involve physical fitness as well. So there are different activities like double dutch jump roping and nature walks and things that the library is sponsoring. So please make sure you take a look at the different brochures the library's got and sign up for the summer reading game. We have summer reading games for adults and for teens and for kids. You don't have to live in the Ann Arbor district to participate, but we just want people to have fun with summer reading and get outside and move and enjoy our local area. So tonight we're here together because of a grant through the National Institute of Health that the U of M asked us to participate in. We're very thrilled to participate in a Partners in Research grant, and the reason to have this grant is to learn more about how you, the public, and you, the clinical researchers, can get together. What is it that you and as the public are interested in learning about clinical research? What do you think you know? What do you want to learn? And what would you like the researchers, the scientists, to know about what your desires are? How can we make clinical research more applicable to your daily lives? Because as science moves ahead, it in part moves ahead because of the scientific research going on behind the new drug or the new developments and the new devices that makes our life safer and easier and helps pull things together. So we have a couple of scientists here tonight, as well as Pete Thomas from The Biggest Loser. So we're going to have Pete talk for a bit, and then we'll have our two clinical researchers talk a bit, and then we will have a panel discussion where we hope that you ask lots of questions and have a great debate about different topics. So we thank our partners at MISHAR for being our partner in research with the National Institute of Health grant. We thank the YMCA for helping us to line up some of our speakers tonight and for providing information about their projects. And I'm going to now introduce our speaker, Pete Thomas. Pete appeared today on NBC, Pete appears here today, but he appeared originally on NBC's hit reality show, The Biggest Loser. At his largest, Pete weighed over 416 pounds, and when he showed up at the Biggest Loser Ranch in March 2005, he weighed in at 401 pounds. He was voted off the show 62 days later after having already lost 83 pounds, which is amazing. In November of the same year, he arrived back at the show's finale, having lost an amazing 185 pounds in only 9 months. In addition to regaining his health, he also won the $100,000 prize for the contestant who lost the highest percentage of weight among those voted off the show. And he is still maintaining his slim body today by watching what he eats and exercising regularly. And we were just talking, he's even completed a full marathon, which, if you've never done it, it is certainly a feat to achieve. Today he makes his living as a motivational speaker, encouraging people around the country to overcome obstacles and to pursue a healthy life. He also helps people lose massive amounts of weight with his personally developed intensive weight loss program called Lose It Fast, Lose It Forever. He's been featured in People Magazine, The Detroit News, In Touch Weekly, and Runner's World. And he's appeared on, in addition to The Biggest Loser, The 700 Club, Extra, ABC's The View, and on commercials nationwide. I will introduce our researchers as they are up at the table later and give you more information about them. But now, please help me welcome our own Biggest Loser, Pete Thomas.
Thank you so much. Thank you. How's everyone this evening? Oh, I need to use my. All right, great. Everyone doing well? Good. All right, everybody stand up. Stand up. Let's stand up. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to go out this way, up the stairs, and we're going to do a couple laps around the building, and then we're going to come back, okay? Celeste mentioned it. You know, you all could be doing some activity. Thank you for standing. You all can have a seat. Before I get started, I want to take just a quick minute to play this video. This is kind of a summary of my life on the Biggest Loser Ranch.
All right, my name is Peter. I'm 36 years old. I'm from Ypsilanti, Michigan. The main thing that motivated me to come on the show is the fact that I was 36 years old and severely overweight. I felt horrible. The biggest, absolute biggest person in the group.
Pick it up, Pete. 8. Faster. 9.
Biggest Loser really saved my life.
Come back.
I'm still a big guy and still got some more weight to lose, but I just feel awesome.
It breaks my heart to do this, but I voted for Pete. I love you, man.
I love you too, brother.
You sound good.
Yeah, I feel real good.
When I arrived at the ranch, I weighed 401 pounds, and now I'm down just a little below my goal weight. I hit 264. It feels great to be 264 pounds. I haven't weighed this since college. I'm back to playing basketball regularly. Biggest Loser really saved my life. I was severely overweight. It was just a matter of time before my body was going to start shutting down.
I've lost 50 pounds so far. When Pete left to go to the ranch, I told myself I was going to get on that treadmill and I was just going to walk until I fell off. Pete and I are definitely in control of our lives. We just see children in our future, you know, just a happy couple.
We're back at the Biggest Loser Live finale. Right now, the eliminated players are weighing in, and whoever has the greatest percentage of total weight loss will win $100,000. Pete,
yes.
You're up.
Thank you.
Before you get on that scale.
Yes.
It's so funny. I couldn't drag you guys on the scale. Now you're like running for it.
Ready.
First of all, I want to know, what have you done with Pete? And second of all, and you not only lost that weight, but you inspired your wife, too.
Yes.
How
my
much
wife,
weight has she lost?
Pam, my queen, she's lost 70 pounds today.
You have to lose at least, in order for Pete to take the lead, he has to lose at least 153 pounds. So let's see. Let's see. It was 401, and what's your current weight?
As I. Thank you, thank you, thank you very much. Well, before I get started, I want to make sure I extend thank yous to the Partners in Research Program with the National Institutes of Health and the Michigan Institute for Clinical and Health Research in the Ann Arbor Y. I want to thank everyone for having me out tonight. I want to thank Celeste and Jenny, all the workers here at the Ann Arbor Public Library. And I always say this, you know, when I was on the Biggest Loser Ranch, we were always sweaty and, you know, partly naked. And so we had sound guys always stuffing microphones in us all over the place. So I have a special place in my heart. I want to thank the audiovisual guys as well. So I want to tell you a little bit about myself. My name, of course, as you've heard, is Pete Thomas. I'm going to give you a little bit of background about myself, tell you a little bit about my experiences on the Biggest Loser Ranch, and hopefully you guys can pull out some examples, some information for yourselves as well that will help you or other family members. You know, if nothing else, hopefully this will be motivational. You can go along and tell somebody else, you know, about, hey, I heard this guy lost a lot of weight and he's keeping it off. Well, again, my name, as I mentioned, is Pete Thomas. So I want to tell you a little bit about my background. Really, my weight problem started when I was really young. My mother struggled with mental illness, a combination of paranoia and dementia. And because of this, we were often on the go. She had this fear that someone was going to come along and take me away from her. So we were often on the go. We lived, we lived in approximately 12 different cities by the time I was 12 years old. So I've lived in Cleveland, Ohio, Shaker Heights, Norfolk, Virginia, Washington, D.C., of course, Detroit, Michigan, East Lansing, Michigan. We lived all over the place.
And because we were often transient, often on the go, I was never settled in any one place for any period of time and did not learn, I didn't learn lots of things. I didn't learn proper nutritional habits, for one. For instance, I can remember the time when I was living in East Lansing, Michigan. We were living there, and at this particular location, my mom didn't believe in cutting on the gas. And we had a gas stove. So no gas, you got a gas stove, you kind of got a problem there. And we were living there in East Lansing, and we would often go downtown, down to East Lansing, to this little Catholic church. But we weren't going to Mass. What we were actually doing was going to pick up the church bulletins, because in the church bulletins were 2-for-1 Whopper coupons. And that's kind of how we lived. We would often eat, you know, from fast food because, again, we didn't have any gas at that location. And so those problems went on and went on and went on for years until I was adopted right around the age of 12 or 13 years old by third cousins there in Detroit, Michigan. But, again, because of the way I grew up, I never played any sports or any of that kind of stuff when I was in high school or college. Ended up going to Wayne State for a year, came up here to the University of Michigan, became more active during those years, played recreational league basketball and all of that good stuff, which would allow me at some point to lose a little weight or allow my weight really to even out. But I always had this problem with my mouth, that those eating issues were always there and they were hidden. Now, I happened to get married to a wonderful wife. And once I got married, my wife has said, you know, honey, it would be nice if you spent more time at home. You're playing recreational league basketball a lot, you know. It'd be nice if you spent some time at home. And so that's exactly what I did, although I went to the extreme and I became a couch potato. And so I can remember after about 7 years of marriage, I was just sitting there on the couch and I had picked up right about 10 pounds a year. By the way, that's the way a lot of people gain weight, slowly, picking up 10 pounds a year. There are other examples of that as well, but about 10 pounds a year. And so my wife comes along, she says, you know, honey, I didn't mean for you to give up basketball altogether. But by then, I was a Republican, not a Democrat, a Republican, so it was a little too late to be active. And so whenever people ask me, well, how did you gain the weight? I just blame it on my wife. And then she hits me with a donut, so, you know, it all works out. But again, I was one of your neighbors. I was up here in Ann Arbor, joined a great church, and for many years I was just putting on the weight and putting the weight on, and I tried all these different weight loss programs. I tried everything and lost a little weight and gained a little back and lost a little and gained it back. And then in 2004, while working, sitting at my office there, my home office, I would look over my shoulder and I would watch The Biggest Loser. And I said, you know what, I'm going to apply for that show. But who gets on that show? Real people don't get on that show. Well, actually, they do. I end up sending an application. We made a crazy video and turned in a great video and went to Indianapolis and tried out with the casting folks and ended up making it on the show. And that was in, actually, I can remember, it's interesting how they do things in Hollywood. You know, they called me February 28th, 2005 and said, Pete, are you ready? Are you ready to come out for the show? I said, oh, yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Okay, your plane leaves tomorrow at 4. So mind you, I had to turn around and pack and get everything together, and we were doing real estate investment, so I had to transfer funds around to make sure everything was just right. But then I flew out to California, and for 10 days in the month of March, I tried out for the show. And tryouts, we were basically secluded in this hotel. And so there in the hotel, we actually had to take a 500-question psychological examination, and we had to talk to attorneys and lawyers. And I tried to think about it afterwards. Why would they have you take a 500-question psychological exam? And I figured it out. When they tell you you can't have chocolates, they want to make sure you don't hit anybody. That's what it is. That's what it is. And so we went through all of this vetting process. Did we ever use vetting before the last election? I'm sorry, I digress. Anyway, we went through this whole process to get onto the Biggest Loser Ranch. And so I made it onto the ranch and at my largest. Now, mind you, I had no idea how weight loss worked. And so I started right there in the hotel room. I started starving myself. I'm thinking, that's how you lose weight. And so I arrived in L.A. at 416 pounds, but then by the time I made it to the ranch, I was 401, and all of that talk about ice cream, my buddy here, he demands that we bring him out. And this is me the very first day on the Biggest Loser Ranch. I've only gotten to the neck. So there we are, 401 glorious pounds. Let's see. A waist size over 60 inches. Now, you know, when it comes to waist, guys, we measure, you know, it's almost a gambling term. It's the over-under. You know, the under there, if you put the belt under, that was only about 54 inches, but over, that's a 60. By the way, one of my favorite measurements for obesity and that kind of stuff is it's like the hip-to-height ratio. They say that you're doing pretty good if your hips are half your height. So I was 6'5", that's 77 inches. This waist was 60. So that's like, what, a 5 foot waist? You know, that's a whole nother person by itself, you know? But that was day one on the ranch. Now, went through a great, which way do I point? Do I point back there? There, okay. Went through some incredible experiences there on the ranch. Was voted off after exactly 62 days. Lost 83 pounds working out in those 62 days. Then came home and I was just one of your big neighbors. I just happened to be running through the neighborhood at a very slow pace. But I ran through the neighborhood for another 6.5, 7 months and you guys saw the finale. So great and awesome experience. But you know, the day after the finale, the very next morning, I had a set in my mind that I was going to keep the weight off. I thought that's the only reason you would ever go on this type of show and expose yourself. The only reason you would be 90% naked in front of the whole world. Well, there's two reasons. One, you've got to believe that you're going to have an incredible after picture. You've got to believe that, number one. And then number two is you want to make this a lifestyle change. And so that's exactly what I did. And actually, after a couple of years of keeping the weight off, I was approached by the Ann Arbor Public Schools about putting a class together. And so I did it. And some of these principles I'm going to teach you are the things that I've learned throughout the years. And what I've learned is to be successful at health and wellness, and specifically when it comes to weight, you've got to master, you've got to really become highly competent in these three things. You must master your mind, manage your mouth, and multiply your muscles. These three things are critical. You know, I had a buddy of mine, he told me, well, Pete, you need to tell people more about the mental side. I'm, what mental side? You just do it. Just do it. And I realized I was taught a lot of stuff, and a lot of things had become habit. And when people are successful with things, there are some habitual things that they go through. And so I'm going to distill a few of those to you tonight, but I'm going to share some lessons that I learned along the way. The first thing, I'm going to go in a little bit different order. I'm going to talk about managing your mouth. So we must learn to manage your mouth. All right? And so that brings about caloric calculations. Here is the very first day, you know, when I learned this on the ranch. But before I do that, I must say, this was the sweater vest that I used to wear when I was on the ranch. And so I had these, I call them the fat rules. When you're big, I had certain rules so you just would not, you know. One of the rules was called CTB, cover the belly. All right, cover the belly. You just, I don't want the belly just hanging out there. So I had cover the belly. I saw a young fellow over there. Young fellow. What's your name? Can you come help me? Can your brother come help me? I have money. That kind of always works. That kind of always works. What's your name?
Jason.
Jason, good to meet you. How are you, sir? There, I'll give you $1 if you wear this for the rest of the class, okay? Or the rest of the session tonight. Will that work? Now, here's the deal. I'll give you $100 if you can fill it up before the night is over, all right? All right, go ahead, have a seat. Thank you, sir. Have a seat. Have a seat. So again, I'm sorry. Back to this. Now, this was my typical Friday night. Now, on a Friday night, you may be similar to the way that I was, but you know, you're having a long week at work and you're tired. And so on a Friday night, what I would do is I would go to Outback Steakhouse and I'd have these Aussie cheese fries. Now, these were my fries. I wasn't sharing these with anybody else, you know. The sauce, all of it, these were mine. No backup, get your own appetizer. These were mine. And then I would go from there and we would go to the movies. And at the movies, I'd have a large hot buttered movie popcorn. Now, the large hot buttered movie popcorn has to be made in a special way, okay? So you tell the little 15-year-old that's serving you there, yes, put 12 kernels in, stop right there. All right, let's add a few pumps of butter. 12 more kernels, stop right there, add a few more pumps of butter. Now, you repeat that 8 to 12 times and then you've got a large hot buttered movie popcorn, all right? That's what you got. Now, here's the deal. Those two equal this big guy. And we're going to play a little game here together. We're going to play a game. You guys are all here for obesity, so you're going to learn something. And maybe you already know it. Let's take a guess. If you've got a pen, write down how many calories you think are in this large, hot, buttered movie popcorn. Mind you, it's just maize. It's just popcorn. And then write down on your little sheet of paper how many calories you think are in that Aussie cheese fries. I mean, it's just everything, you know. Write down. And then let me hear you. How many calories you think it is? Anybody raise your hand. Huh? We'll start with the popcorn. Well, how many calories do you think is in there? 750? Don't cheat. Exactly. That's cheating. All right. How many calories in here? 300,000. All right. And then how many you think are in the Aussie cheese fries? 450. Now, before I give you the answer, I've got to give you some context. All right. Got to give you some context. The big guy here, 416 pounds with the sag on there, 416 pounds, he requires approximately 3,500 calories a day just to fuel his body, all right? Just to fuel his body, 3,500 calories a day, all right? Now, let's take a look at this. I've got my handy assistant back in the back. Patricia, could you please tell us how many calories are in a large hot buttered movie popcorn? 1,500 calories in a large hot buttered movie popcorn, all right? So we know our numbers are off for the Aussie cheese fries, right? All right, and tell me, how many calories do you think are in the Aussie cheese fries? Patricia, could you give us the answer for that one? 2,900 calories. 20, now I'll tell you what she's looking in a minute, but let's do the math here. I require 3,500 for the day. I'm over there at 1,500 and 2,900 over here. That's 4,400 calories between just those two items. Did I gain weight or lose weight that day? Yes, I'm exceedingly abundantly over my caloric requirements for the day. So the very first day, well, actually about day two on the Biggest Loser Ranch, I learned this concept of BMR. It was an amazing, eye-opening concept, basal metabolic rate. That's what BMR stands for. Basically, if we want to use the most basic basic analogy, your car is like a truck. Your truck a truck requires calories, requires energy. Your body requires energy, all right? Now, if you overfuel a truck, and of course, this was a more dramatic, you know, a statement when gas was $4 a gallon, but once you take a fuel tank or a fuel pump and you put it into a truck and you begin to fill it up, when that truck is full, what happens? It stops. No, it doesn't. What happens at a gas station is when you fill that up, the click goes off, right? And it stops. Well, what happens when we begin to fill this up and we overfill? Well, we fill up. As a buddy in one of my class says, what he said was, our gas tanks expand. All right? So you see, there's no click in us. Now, I believe that there's a click when we're young mentally, but there's no click in us. So you've got to know this number for yourself. It's very important that you know the number. Now, BMR varies per person and per occupation. Obviously, Serena Williams over there, she won Wimbledon. She's an athlete. She requires a lot of calories, but she does not require as many calories or as much energy as the muscle man here, all right? Obviously, a short person and tall person, they require different amounts of calories. Now, this should make sense to you. A person who sits at a desk job all day long requires less energy than the same type of person who is a mailman or mail woman and is walking around all day long. Does that make sense at its most basic level? I hope that does. So that was an incredible, incredible eye-opening experience for me. This is just some information from my website. So people have always asked me, well, how did that play into the way that you lost weight and all of that? So this is my actual typical diet before Biggest Loser. And so what we see is a couple of things here. This is what I would have for breakfast. So I'd have 4 eggs, 9 slices of bacon, and 16 ounces of grapefruit juice. Somebody's surprised. You don't get this big and sexy by eating, you know, whole grain buckwheat here, all right? 16 ounces of grapefruit, 9 slices of bacon, and 4 eggs. All right, here's the deal. 1,100 calories for breakfast. 1,100 for breakfast. Now, the next question is, what do I eat now? I eat 9 slices turkey bacon, 4 servings of egg beaters, 16 ounces of ruby red crystal light. Now, notice the difference down here. Now, there's some magic in this. Can anybody see the magic that's in there? Same volume. Exactly right. So if anyone ever, ever, ever tells you it's about portion size, bring up this analogy and ask them about that. All right? Because that's a common thing that you always hear. When somebody's like me, I was obese, and they mentioned portion size, but nobody ever explained it. And then I thought about it. Well, actually, I learned some things, and I'm like, wow, it's not really about portion size. This is one of the principles that I teach. So here we have one regular quarter pound of hamburgers, 300 calories. Well, that same portion size, if you get leaner, is only 150 calories. So I'm a big guy, and as a big guy, I think, okay, I get to have twice as much hamburger for the same number of calories. And that's the way that I eat. That's the way that I eat. Now, here's another example. One pat of butter is 90 calories. One spray of I Can't Believe It's Not Butter spray is only 1 calorie per spray. That large buttered, hot buttered movie popcorn, 1,500 calories. If we take it in, you would get hot air pop popcorn. That's only 200 calories. And then you'd have to spray a whole lot of sprays to get all the way back up to 1,500. You could almost spray every single kernel to get back up to 1,500 calories, all right? Now, here's another place where this is very important for context. People ask me, do you still eat out? Absolutely. I just know how. I know how to practice that principle I taught you. Modification, not starvation. I'm not starving myself. I'm modifying what I eat. So here we go. We're taking a Whopper, 770 calories, a Whopper with cheese. So the question I always ask people is, how many people love a bun? Just a straight bun with nothing on it. You just love the bun. You just absolutely love the bun. Nobody I know absolutely loves the bun. So I asked, okay, can we substitute out the bun with something? Oh, if you can substitute the bun, you save 240 calories. The mayo, mayo is good, but can I substitute that for mustard? I can potentially save 160 calories. Cheese, I can substitute that out for nothing and save 90 calories there. I can get this Whopper. Now, mind you, there are meat and potatoes kind of guys and gals. I'm a meat and meat kind of guy. You know, I'm just naturally, I naturally drift towards meat. I love eating meat. And so here you just, now obviously this is wrapped in some lettuce, and if you're in California, they have a special name for it. They call it protein style. I guess they do that in California. Here they call it low carb, and they throw it in a plastic thing, and it's all yucky. You know what I mean? But this is a basic concept that you can understand. If you begin to make modifications or substitutions wherever you're at, wherever you eat, you're going to save some calories. And so this is, again, where this comes into play. Here's a female, 24 years old, approximately 5'5", 126. Her BMR is 1,393 calories. When she eats that Whopper, she's over 50% of her caloric requirements, her energy requirements for the day. All right? Now, I've got to move quick because I got a lot of stuff to cover. The next thing that I've learned is I really had to master my mind. And in mastering your mind, I advise each and everybody to set some SMART goals. And for me, SMART was specific. When I set specific goals when we were on the Biggest Loser Ranch, you know, they asked me, well, Pete, how much weight do you want to lose? And I had a reasonable weight loss goal. I said, I want to get back to where I was the second year of college. You guys remember the second year of college is after you pick up the freshman 15. I said, that's about where I want to get. So when you're looking to lose weight or become healthy or run that 5K or that marathon, set a specific goal. The next thing is, excuse the layout there, the next thing is your goals need to be measurable. We were weighing in all the time, well, at least once a week for the show, and that's because we were constantly measuring our success or our failures. I have to tell you this one story. I can remember when Nick Gaza was there, and he was going to go weigh in on and I'll tell you quickly how the weigh-in works. The weigh-in that you see on TV is fake. It's completely fake. It's all staged simply for the purposes of television. We actually weigh in first thing in the morning, bright and early in the morning. What you do is you come out and there's this little scale there, and there's a production assistant who has to write down the information, and then there's a cameraman who records the information so that nobody cheats. Well, there's this young lady. Her name is Suzanne. Now, mind you, the weigh-in is the most important thing on the show. So Suzanne comes in, and she literally drops everything down to just some little pasties. Okay? Now, mind you, she is, 5 foot two, 230. So we're not talking, you know, model yet. She's not model ready quite yet. You know what I mean? So she hops on the scale, and the guys have to do their job. You know, they have to look and record it. And the other guy around the corner, his name is Nick Gaza. He gets upset. Like, you guys let her weigh in naked. You let her weigh in naked. So he comes around, and he just takes off everything. Now, he's about 5'4", 330. So he's a long way from the runway. You know what I mean, Henny? Standing there, and they have to do their job and write down. Mind you, after that, they made a rule that you must have at least underwear on when you weigh in. At least underwear on. But our goals were measurable each and every week. And then, of course, our goals were aggressive. And this is what I believe. I believe you can be aggressive with your goals. We worked out on the Biggest Loser Ranch 4 hours each and every day. 4 hours, 6 days a week. And then on our off day, I can remember my first off day, I was, you know, in all this type of muscle pain and joint pain, and I'm getting over this, and I think, finally, I get an off day, I can relax. And Jillian says, well, on your off day, I want you to take an active rest day. I'm like, well, what the heck does that mean? You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm going to eat and watch TV. That's active to me, you know what I mean? What? She says, no, what I want you to do is I want you to take a hike into the mountains. And so we were in Simi Valley. It ended up being a 4-hour hike
into the mountains. And I mean, it was so bad. I can remember walking up, you know, the closest, I'm from Detroit, so the closest thing I've got to a mountain is when they tear down the building, the house next door, and they fill it over with dirt, and we ride up and down with dirt bikes. You know, that's the closest thing that I've seen as far as a mountain goes. And so I can remember walking up this mountain and sweating and turning colors, and I'm looking in front of me at my teammate who's in front of me, and I swear I'm seeing things because he's like beet red. And I realized, no, he's just sunburnt. You know, it was horrible. It was horrible. That was the off day. So I do believe in being aggressive with your approach to weight loss and all that stuff. Now, here's the other thing in SMART. You need to be realistic. We do have to have that. You know, I always have some people say, well, is it really realistic? And so I like to show this person. This young lady is Kimmy Heider, Kimkins. Kim Heidi, that's her name. And so this is her before picture, and this is her after picture. Amazing, isn't it? Except for the fact that that lady is actually a Russian model. That's not really her. And so her Heidi Diaz, I'm sorry. So here's Kimmer's before picture, and here's her after picture, and here her that's her on trial. Now, Kimkins.com, it was actually, she was featured in Woman's Day. When she was featured in Woman's Day, this awesome, amazing, incredible diet, which, by the way, was a starvation diet where you had to eat 800 calories a day, and people would get on there and talk about the weight they lost. Of course, you would on 800 calories a day. You know, she ended up having to be fined and all that. But that day, when she was in Woman's World, she had $1.2 million worth of signups on her website. So the question, again, that I pose to you is losing a massive amount of weight realistic? Well, you can't really ask that question anymore. It is if you're willing to put in the time. Does that make sense? And then a couple other things. Again, we like to have something that's time-based. No reason in waiting 900 years to get your health in order. There's no reason for that. You know, you could really pay some attention to this. I like to tell people, you know, my classes are 8 to 12 weeks long, but I say you really need to take a year. Just take it up as a part-time job or a hobby that you're going to focus on getting this right. You're going to read what you need to read. You're going to exercise, and you're going to solve this problem this year. That's the way I believe. You don't have to stretch this out for year after year after year. If you take the time to do it, you can solve it this year. Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Exactly. And then the other thing is your goals need to be evolving, or you need to evaluate. So I take SMARTER and I add on the ER to make it take SMART and make it smarter. For instance, if you're a school teacher, there's no reason that you can't dedicate extra time to exercise over the summer. I always have people in my class who say, well, 4 hours a day isn't realistic. And then I always tell them about some school teachers I know that end up taking 2.5-3 hours a day in the summer when they don't have anything else to do, and they knock out that type of work, that type of effort. Because there is two parts to it, I believe. There's losing fast, and then there's losing it forever. Those two things can be separate at times. And then, of course, the goal that you set, whether it be weight loss or weight maintenance, getting your blood pressure in line or whatever it is, you need to have a rewarding component to it. So I got to tell you about it. You know, I had faith. Many, many moons ago, I had faith that one day I was going to lose the weight and keep it off. So I took all of these big, sexy pictures way before Biggest Loser was ever around. Way before Biggest Loser was ever around. And so I got to tell you guys this story. I can remember the very first day, the first day on the Biggest Loser campus. They said, you know, Pete, if you could get into anything at all, if you could get into any clothing at all, you know, any item of clothing, what would it be? I said, wow, I know exactly what I would get into. And I said, well, that's weird. Usually only the women know exactly what they want. But go ahead, tell us anyway. What would it be? I said, you know, I've got two things in mind. I said, first thing is, if I could get into any outfit at all, I saw this movie called Soul Food. And at the beginning of Soul Food, there's this guy that walks in. His name is Samuel. And he walks in. This is his ex getting married. He's got this beautiful all-white suit on. I said, I could see myself in that all-white suit. I could see that. I said, and then the other thing is, I said, but that's my backup choice. You know, really my first choice, if I could do anything, I could see myself in an all-black leather outfit. Like Neo in the movie The Matrix. That's the suit that I really want. You know, I just want to stand in Michigan in July, and I want my leather cape to just flow in the wind when there is no wind, you know? That's what I really want to get into. And so what we would do on a regular basis, we would work out in this gym that had our goal outfits in front of us, all right? And so you can see all of that. And then that first day, though, they brought me over on camera, and they said, Pete, you know, I want you to look at your goal outfit, and I want you to really tell us what it means to you. Now, mind you, here's the deal. Reality TV is very cheap to produce, So when I told them that my goal outfit was that leather outfit, they like, yeah, whatever. And so what they ended up doing, they said, we've got your suit. It happens to be right here in the wardrobe. So I'm like, well, cool. That's just sweet. I'll take that. But as I got up closer to it, I just had these images of Don Johnson. I'm like, who is, you know? And so they said, Pete, we want you to stand there. We want you to tell us what this suit means to you. And I look at the suit and I said, whose two sister suit is that? Two sisters are Polly and Esther. Whose two sister suits are that? They said, Pete, we need you to pretend, please pretend like that's your goal outfit. So that's a little bit of what reality television is like. So I had to pretend like that was my goal outfit. But you better believe after I lost, after I got voted off the ranch, I made sure that I went out and I got my goal outfit. You know, I was very happy to get my goal outfit. Now, mind you, I thought I looked really good right there. I was 318 pounds. I didn't know that I had another 100 to go, all right? But again, the point here is let's set some goals. I'm not just set some goals, but let's set some rewards to go along with your goals. Make sense? Now, this is the tool that I would recommend that each and every one of you get. Katricia, could you hold that up? This is called the Calorie King, calorie, fat, and carbohydrate counter. Just an amazing little tool. It's got all types of caloric and fat and carbohydrate information in it, just for all the different restaurants all over the place. This is amazing. At one point, I had 7 of these around my house. I had one on each floor. That's 3 floors, one in each car, one at each job. I mean, this thing has just been an amazing thing. And then I got to tell you this story before I move on. You know, I preach modification, not starvation, that you should be able to make substitutions to certain foods to lower its caloric content. You can lower all the different types of content just by making certain substitutions. There are some things you just can't do that with. You know, I could remember I was there on the Biggest Loser Ranch, and they had these things there. They have all of this, all of these different food items all over the place, all over the ranch. And you would think that it tastes good, but most of it doesn't, because the art department actually sets it up there, and they put shellac on it. For television purposes, and shellac doesn't taste good. We tried. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't taste good. You know? Roast beef with shellac is horrible. You know, it really is. But these particular items, they were there. I can remember walking down the steps, and I saw these things. I'm like, oh, let's try the shellac of the day. You know what I mean? And so I go over and try it, and my knees buckled. Like, whoa, what is this? And I went, and I got another one. And my knees buckled again. And I realized when I was in trouble. I knew immediately I was in trouble. So what I did was I called my teammate. I said, Mark! So I call up to Mark. He comes downstairs. I said, Mark, what are these things? And so he tried them, and his knees buckled. He said, these are Jordan almonds. They're famous at weddings. I said, oh, my God, we're in trouble. I said, I'm going to get kicked off the ranch for Jordan almond. Oh, my God. And so this is what we did. We went out throughout the whole house, and we took all of these things, all of these Jordan almonds, and we dumped them in the trash. We cleared out the entire house. Art department was very upset. Now, here's the problem. We put them in the trash can right by the laundry room, and we're on a workout show, so we're washing clothes like twice a day. And so I walk down to, you know, to wash my clothes, and they're just yelling at me, Pete, Pete, Pete. So I look over at them, you know, look around, make sure nobody's looking, no camera there. And so I start sneaking these things. I'm telling you, you don't go without chocolate for 2 months, and you start doing some crazy things. So this is what we had to do. We actually had to take liquid Tide. And we had to pour liquid Tide all on the Jordan almonds in the garbage can. So here's the lesson. These are what we call trigger foods. You can't play with trigger foods. You can't play with them. There's no modification. You can't get those and peel off the hard coating. You know what I mean? You just can't play with trigger foods. And so I learned. I do not let trigger foods trick me. I completely get those out of my life. Now, this is the last point I'm going to cover. Got to multiply your muscle. Of course, we're talking about regular muscle, and we're talking about your cardiovascular system and all that good stuff. We'll summarize that. Now, here I am, right around 380 pounds, doing some high-intensity work. Now, I don't even have my clients doing that, but of course, in that environment, we have been prepared and trained by Jillian in such an awesome, awesome way. I think I'm around 380, and I should be doing high knees right there. So it's just an incredible, incredible experience. It's amazing what the body will do when it's called upon. It's amazing. So here's the thing. This is a couple of my principles. One, there's a difference between activity and a workout. All right? So if you're ever in a gym, hopefully this isn't you. If you're ever in a gym and you see somebody over there, you know, they're reading a magazine while watching TV. Yeah, that's better than nothing, but not much better. Anybody in here like golf and yoga and bowling? You guys like that? Raise your hand. That's okay. That's excellent. It's not very good for weight loss, but that's excellent. You know, any type of activity is better than nothing, you know. Crawling is better than sitting still, you know. But if you really want to burn some calories and burn the weight off, you need to work out. Here we see the guy, he's sweating. He's got a good pace on. So this is a very, very important principle for you all to understand. And the thing is, anybody can do this. This is one of my classes. We met a couple of years ago up at Ipsy High, and we would meet and we would work out, and over time they progressed to the point where they went and ran a 5K. So you can see all shapes and sizes and all of that. The body is amazing what it can do, what it can do. Actually, and I got a couple of people here from my Saturday class. Lisa's here from Saturday. Tell us what we did on Saturday. That'd be good to hear.
We did
2 hours of circuit training, and then the 4th of July bonus. Ran a 5K afterwards. And this is all these different types of shapes and sizes. And that was on July 4th. So it's amazing, amazing what the body can do when it's called upon. Now, these are just some of the things we did. If you want me to, I can email this to you. So the last thing that I want you to tell you about, to be successful in your weight loss journey, I got to tell you a little bit about a couple of these guys. This here was my buddy, Dr. Jeff. Now, he had... Literally, he was a fan. He's a family physician. Ankle damage. His ligaments were damaged. The ligaments in his ankles were, some of them were missing. All types of problems. So when he first got to the Big Azusa Ranch, he would have to put his hand on our back as we would walk up and down hills. This was one of my teammates. One of the guys that I looked up to. Every morning he would get up to work out. Now if he's getting up to work out, what excuse do I have not to? Make sense? Then I got to tell you about the other guy. This is the other guy here. His name is Mark. He was the one I called upon when I was having my struggle. Great guy. He's a police officer from San Francisco. And so I've learned over the years that there's one last major component that you need if you're going to be successful. You see, what happened with Dr. Jeff, what he did was, once we were all voted off the show, he went to a local carnival. He said, "Pete, I saw this shirt. I had to get it for you." You know, the shirt said, "Pete, the man, the myth, the legend." And he sent the shirt to me over the summer. What a great teammate. He's just awesome, just awesome. Now, Mark, he was my main competition, my main competition. So once we got voted off, he said, "Pete, I got something for you. I got something for you. I've been thinking about you all summer, and I got something for you." And he sent it to me the day before the show premiered. Can anybody guess what it was? Chocolate. Jordan almonds. Exactly right. Exactly right. And so the principle that I've learned from this is you've got to gather great teammates. Not every one of your teammates is on your side. Not everyone. We know we've got some saboteurs at home, but that's a very important principle for you all to learn. Gather great teammates around you if you're going to be successful. These are just a couple of people that have gone through my course. And the last thing I want to say, remember, there is a winner within you. Thank you very much.
Very much. We talked about something just briefly earlier. I want to pull out a little bit more distinctly. You have a brochure for the Engage website. This is a fantastic website if you're interested in learning about clinical research that would be applicable to you. So, for example, if you happen to have strokes and diabetes in your family, if you've been a victim of, let's say, cancer or a survivor of cancer, I should say, if you have a different macular degeneration, Alzheimer's, this is a place that you can go and type in your medical history and find out what type of clinical research opportunities are available to you. You might find some things that are really interesting, and you might find some things for family members or friends. So this is a place that I would go and have gone to register and see what's out there and how can I contribute, or at least finger on the pulse and see what's available. Where are the U of M researchers going? Where is the science taking us? So I highly encourage you to take a look here. And next, I would like to introduce our next speakers. We're very happy today to have two U of M experts here to talk on obesity. Dr. Charles F. Berendt is the Dr. Robert C. and Veronica Atkins Professor of Metabolism. He joined the faculty at the University of Michigan Medical Center in 1999, and his clinical interests are in the area of metabolic syndromes and management of type 2 diabetes, which I know runs in my family, so I'm very interested to hear what he's going to say. His research laboratory investigates the mechanism of insulin resistance and utilizes animal models of diabetes to identify the pathways important in understanding diabetes progression. Additionally, his lab also studies adult pancreatic progenitor cells and how they might be used to generate new insulin-secreting beta cells. He is the director of the Michigan Metabolomics and Obesity Center, which was created to serve as the focal point for the study of metabolism, metabolomics, and obesity on the university campus. Chuck, the floor is yours.
Thanks. So I'm gonna give you maybe a little bit more of a science spin on it and tell you sort of the philosophy that we're trying to do at the University of Michigan and give you some of the hurdles that you're going to... I'm actually going to say the same thing Pete said. I'm actually going to tell you exactly the same thing. I'm going to spin it a little bit differently and do it. So, you know, on the left is what we like to do, right? And we really are programmed to do this. And so, you know, what Pete says is having to use your mind to overcome it is actually true. And the way I look at it is that we really are genetically programmed to gain weight. You know, we grew up for hundreds of thousands of years not having enough calories in our environment. And so every time we hit a calorie, we would eat it. Well, right now, we're actually in a time of plenty, and we are able to get all the calories we want. And the other thing we used to do is when after we got calories, we would sit as long as we can until we needed to get more calories to keep living. And we can sit around a whole lot more now, right? So how many people drove around the block once at least to find a parking space closer to where you are? It's actually, and so, you know, when you do that, don't be ashamed that you're doing it, but realize you're doing it because it's really what our inherent nature is. And that's what we're fighting against. And so we're fighting against because that looks really good. And I actually smile when I see that because I would love to do that. And so these are the things that we're working against biology. Okay, and so using your cognitive mind is what Pete does to fight your innate drive to consume calories is really what you're fighting against, and it's difficult. Okay, so there's no doubt it's difficult. If it wasn't really hard, then you know 3/4 of the state of Michigan wouldn't be overweight. Okay, and so this is really what the reality of the situation is. Now, there's ways of doing it. Now, Pete told you one way. I think this is probably the better way to do. Well. Okay, so this is actually an ad from a Sears catalog from 1898. You know, sanitized tapeworms, you know, some people will do a lot of different things. And I'll bet you if you pin Pete down, he would tell you that people did some strange things on the show to try and lose weight. I did a quick calculation, and really it's all energy homeostasis. Now, I'm going to have a couple spins on here. I did a quick calculation sitting with Susan over there. That I figured that, actually, I'll say it this way. How many calories did you eat last year? Yes. How many calories did you eat last year? About 1 million. 1 million calories. Now think about that. So that's 1 million calories the average male. The average female eats about 750,000 calories on average. And so how many calories in a pound of weight? About 3,500. So if you think about it, you know, most people, you know, they'll gain a pound or two of weight a year, and it's a difference of about less than 0.2% of the total number of calories. That's how closely we're regulated. And so little perturbations in that really is what adds up over time. And that's really what Pete said happened to him, and that's what happens to a lot of us, right? So small differences over a long period of time make a big difference. Now, I calculated out roughly that Pete, during his year that he lost 185 pounds, was it, had a caloric deficit of about 2,000 calories a day, plus or minus, you know, depending on what you do. And that's really what we're getting here. It's really energy balance. So lots of people come into my office, and they tell me that they don't eat anything, and they exercise all the time, and yet they gain weight. You know, you can't break the laws of thermodynamics. And really, you know, Mr. Newton, you know, in the late 1600s had it right. You can't create or destroy energy. You can only convert it. So if you're not losing weight, it's not because you're eating too much or exercising too little. It's just because you have an imbalance of those things and what you really have to do. So it's physical activity, diet-induced thermogenesis, and basal metabolic rate. Those are really the things that really are part of it. Now, there's a really cool theory out there these days. It's called NEAT, non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So we talked about basal metabolic rate. That's how much calories you need just sitting there doing basically nothing. And one of the things to remember is your basal metabolic rate actually goes down when you watch TV. So it goes down about 10%. Really, it's true. Actually, absolutely true. Your brain actually uses, some people more than others, uses a lot of your basal energy that you need. And when you watch TV, actually your brain energy utilization goes down. But there's this thing called this unconscious exercise. So when people try and lose weight, overweight individuals try and lose weight, what happens is that the basal metabolic rate really doesn't change that much. Okay, the diet-induced thermogenesis, that's how much energy it costs just to assimilate food. And physical activity, you're probably doing your work. But what happens is it's this unconscious energy expenditure that changes how much you get up and sit down and move around during a day. And that can be adding up to about 300 calories a day. And there's this crazy guy, Levine, at the Mayo Clinic. He actually studies this a lot, and he has a treadmill as his office. He doesn't have a desk. He has a desk, but it's built on a treadmill. And he walks at 0.7 miles an hour all day. And that's how he saves him. Now, he's a little bit crazy, but anyways.
I looked those desks up online.
Actually, he's a friend, so I can call him crazy. Actually, he knows he's crazy. The other thing I want to tell you is that exercise is really a great thing to do. I mean, exercise, you want to exercise because it really gets you in good shape. The problem with exercise is it's really inefficient, okay? So, you know, you run a mile, you burn about, 120 calories, all right? That's about, a handful of popcorn. So to lose weight, you have to diet. And in fact, there's been a number of studies, especially in women, who, if you just use exercise to lose weight, you don't lose weight. You actually end up gaining weight because exercise is one of the best appetite stimulants. Now, exercise helps you keep weight off. And so here's a graph. This is a studies, 16,000 people who completed studies, about 68%, 80 different studies. And this is sort of the mean things of how much weight people lose. And so if you don't, advice alone, you guys just got to lose weight. You don't lose weight, okay? Look at exercise alone, which is a yellow slide there. It really is very inefficient. If you add exercise to diet, which is diet plus exercise is the green, you can lose weight and you can tend to keep it off a little bit better. The reason why people who continue to exercise keep their weight off better is not necessarily because they're exercising. It's that people who continue to exercise are motivated enough to follow their diet better. Okay? So it goes back to this mind thing. You have to set goals and you have to really stick to it. And it's really a very important thing to do. Now, there's other things, drugs, orlistats, subutramine, they work. But a lot of what I'm showing you here is that most people tend to regain their weight. And actually, statistics show it's easier to quit smoking or quit heroin and stop it forever than it is to lose 10 pounds and keep it off for 2 years, statistically. It's really tough. I mean, this is the biology. So, I'm a very allopathic, very biology-driven kind of guy, and it's all in your brain. And that's why you really have to do it. And so the reason that Weight Watchers is probably one of the more successful weight loss programs because you actually have this interaction, this sort of motivation, these people that are working with you that will drive you and that your cognitive mind can sort of beat out your brainstem, which is really good. Now, the biggest thing I tell my patients is that I don't care if you lose anything. You got to be fitter because it really makes a big difference, okay? So even if you don't lose weight and you exercise, even if you gain a couple pounds, you're going to be better off. Because one, you're going to build up muscle mass a little bit, but your blood pressure is going to go down, your cholesterol levels will be better. You need to go out there and move. It's really good for you. So aerobically fit or unfit individuals, you can see the relative risk of heart disease, cardiovascular disease, mortality. Your risk of dying is much better. I got to say it the right way. Your risk of not dying, is that a risk? Anyways, you're better off if you exercise. Right. Now, So, you know, Bobby Atkins, you know, the Atkins diet, that's how I got this endowed chair, is a graduate of the University of Michigan. Okay? And his widow actually gave some money, and I got some of it. And they tout the Atkins diet. Now, you know, I don't ascribe to any specific diet, although I do think, actually, from a metabolic standpoint, from a diabetes standpoint, it's probably better to get some of the carbohydrates out, at least if you're diabetic. It actually helps your blood sugar. This is a study, one of the best done studies in diet, comparing different diets, high protein diet, high carbohydrate diet, high fat diet, you know, what's best? It doesn't matter. I tell my patients, and there are some of my patients in this audience, they'll tell you, I don't care what you eat. I really don't care what you eat. You have to be calorically restricted. So it doesn't matter. Now, why does the Atkins diet tend to work better right away? Well, because it's really hard to eat a lot of that. It may be a little more sating, right? But if you just eat, you know, the high protein and high fat, it's not as palatable to most people. People like this mix of carbohydrates and fats. Sorry. I'm not used to this. All right. Now, the big point I tell people, and Pete said the same thing, I'm going to say it differently. You saw those fries, those cheesy fries and stuff like that? It's all caloric density. So really, the denser the food, the denser the calories, the more you're going to eat, okay? And this is one of lots of studies that have been done. Weight of food consumed, and what they did is they looked at how dense, how many calories are in a gram of food or how much is there. And those people who ate the least dense food, or actually the most dense food, excuse me, ate more during any given meal. So if you do test meals and you have a denser, more calories, you tend to eat more. So it's this sort of expansion. There are hormones that come out of your gut when you actually expand your gut. And so drinking a nice big glass of water before you eat and things like that can really help. All these little things can add up to help. And you know. So here's energy density. So the lettuce that he was talking about that's usually wilted is bad. But you can see, you know, butter, bacon, potato chips, you know, all these things that really have. So in a pound of corn, you know, there's something like, you know, 300 calories. In a pound of Tostitos, there's about, you know, 3,000 calories. It really makes a difference how you process it, and then you put it in some oil, and it really makes it calorically dense. So think about what you're eating and how sort of dense you think, and you really can actually tell it. You know, if it's got a lot of oil in it and it's flattened out like a potato chip, it's not going to be good as far as the energy and density. Okay? But I also agree with Pete on one important point. You know, you can't restrict those things that give you some hedonistic joy. Okay? But you can eat a couple chips and try and stop. And that's where your cognitive brain has to overcome that sort of that primal brain. See, I don't care. Whatever you ate yesterday, eat about half of it, you know? It's like, no, really. I mean, these little things can make a difference. Now, you're not going to lose 185 pounds in a year. It's you know, Pete is proves the adage, exception, you know, proves the rule. But you can do small changes in weight. Makes a huge difference. If you lose 5% of your body weight, you can have a reduction in your risk of getting diabetes by about 65%, okay? So that's, you know, it's 10 pounds, okay? And it can make a huge difference in your blood pressure and your lipids and all that kind of stuff. So small things can really make a big difference. And in fact, what I tell most of my diabetic patients, I actually don't care if you lose weight, if you exercise, just don't gain weight, because that actually is better. And so long term, we want to do it. Now, we are starting a new, what we call investigational weight management clinic at the university, and we're going to try different things. And one of the things that we're trying to figure out is, can we find a biological thing? What is sating to people? You know, why do you, you know, what is it that when you eat and you put, you know, a Krispy Kreme donut in your mouth, why is that so pleasurable to people? Now, it's 50% carbohydrates and 50% fat. And for some reason, that triggers the hedonistic, this joy center in your brain, like nothing. So we're working with this guy who does what's called pet imaging, and you can look at the, you know, parts of the brain that lights up when you're happy and when you're sad and when you get reward and things like that. And we're trying to find out. And it actually turns out different people respond to different foods. So some of you didn't like the bun, and I know Kate over there loves the bun. Some people just don't care for the bun. So it's protein, carbohydrates, lipids. Other people respond differently, and we're trying to figure out. If you really like lipids and I cut out your carbohydrates, maybe you'll lose weight better or keep it off longer. Okay. So Doesn't matter what you eat, it's how much you eat. Calorically dense foods are the ones that get you, okay? And fast food is calorically dense food, okay? Exercise is really, 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 really a hard way to lose weight, okay? But it really, really, really is good for you. So it's better to be fat and fit than just fat, okay? And very small amounts of weight loss, or even not gaining weight, is really good for you, okay? So these are really things to think about, small changes. Now, everybody wants to lose weight, not for their health most of the time, right? Everybody wants to lose weight so they can get into a white suit, okay?
A polyester one,
yeah. So the reality is that's what motivates people more than health. But you know, if you think about it, you know, health is really an important thing. Obviously, you know, it's not it's sort of facetious to say it that way. But you know, if you're going to do it for a reason, you know, it's, you know, your motivation can be the white suit, but the reason should be that your health is going to be a lot better. Anyways, are you going to introduce Susan? Okay.
Thank you very much. Well, we're going to be 3 for 3 with 3 great speakers tonight. I now have Dr. Susan J. Wolford. She is the medical director of the Pediatric Comprehensive Weight Management Center and a clinical assistant professor with the Child Health Evaluation and Research Unit of the Division of General Pediatrics at the University of Michigan. And don't ask me to say that again. It's an amazing title. Dr. Wolford earned her medical degree at Michigan State University, where she completed her residency and her chief residency. After several years in general practice in Grand Rapids, Michigan, she came to the University of Michigan, where she completed her MPH and a fellowship in health services research. Her research interests focus on the prevention and treatment of childhood obesity, with an emphasis on physician-patient communication related to behavior change. Dr. Wolford.
Thank you very much. All right, so I'm happy to have this opportunity to speak to you about childhood obesity and to say the same thing that Chuck said before me and Pete said before that. Well, not quite the same thing, but many of the things really do translate to childhood obesity. And it's a topic that has gotten a lot of attention with good cause, because we know that it's a huge problem for adults, but it really also is for children. Years ago, back in the 70s, only about 5% of children were considered obese. By the turn of the century, that number had gone up to close to 20%. So it's like 1 in 5 kids are affected by that, which is a whole lot. So what I'm going to talk about today is our approach to treating it at the Weight Management Center at the university. And I think in order to think about that, we have to think about why we ended up in this situation. And so you've seen a similar figure before, all about the calories in versus the calories out, this energy balance. But there's a lot more to it than that, as we all know. And so for children, we like to think about it in a framework called the socio-ecological model, which just talks about the different things in our environment that impact what your weight will actually be. So at the top level, we think about the society. And so government policies and media. Now, we already know that if you look at TV, your BMR goes down, right? But also while you're looking at TV, they're advertising fast foods to children while they watch Sesame Street. Those sorts of things have an effect. And then in that same level, I like to mention the societal norms, the things that we all think are normal. And I'm going to thank Pete for actually covering some of this, but there's that bag of popcorn again. Now, this is not the, what was it, the super butter... version of it?
Hot buttered.
Large hot buttered version. This is not your large hot buttered version. But about 20 years ago, a normal serving was about 5 cups. So you're good at guessing now. About how many calories would you say would be in that? 270. So this has some, but not, it's not your super butter one. 20 years later, look how much more we get in what we consider to be an average serving. So, of course, we have more than doubled the serving size, and we more than double the calories in an average serving of popcorn. And I always like to mention also soda. This is like the nemesis of anybody who's dealing with weight management for children. So years ago, we used to have small serving sizes, about 6 ounces, 85 calories. Now, on average, it's 20 ounces and 250 calories. And of course, this doesn't take into account those of us who may favor those, what is it, super mega gulp that you can get. And this really is a societal thing. So you may notice that I'm not originally from here. So I was born and grew up in England. And my brother-in-law is American. My sister married an American. When we go back to England, he just can't get over it. He's like, why are they gypping me? Everything I try to buy is so small. Every serving is so small. It is a cultural thing there. The sodas are smaller, everything is smaller, and it has an effect, I think, on the weight of the population as a whole. So then we have community levels. And for kids, we wonder about, are there safe areas for them to exercise? Can they walk to school? Do they have access to grocery stores that sell fruits and vegetables? And there's some wonderful surveys out for Washtenaw County from the HIP survey that shows over time how the number of grocery stores have gone down and the number of restaurants and fast foods has gone up. Those sorts of changes make a huge difference. Ooh, what did I do? I turned it off. Okay, and then at the organizational level, for kids, we're talking about school. So do they get gym ever, daily? Does it happen at all? And vending machines. Well, I think we shouldn't have them, but if we have them, what's in them? And that's really important. And then at the interpersonal level, we think about the family dynamics and things like, actually, breastfeeding, we believe, has an effect on whether a child will develop obesity. So really, things early on make a difference. And then at our individual level, our psyche and our genes, the things that make us uniquely who we are, all of these things play a role. And all of this comes to bear on what seemed like a very simple balance in the beginning. So when we deal with treating children, we pretty much deal at these two levels. Now, I think these three levels are incredibly important, and it takes advocacy to change these things, and hopefully they will change over time. But in a treatment program, we're really dealing with those two levels there. And so at the University of Michigan, we have the Michigan Pediatric Outpatient Weight Evaluation and Reduction Program. And because that's hard to say too quickly and too many times, it's otherwise known as the MPOWER program. And it is a 6-month, and I would like to emphasize, family-focused program for 12 to 17-year-old kids with a BMI above the 95th percentile, so they're actually classified as obese. And that family focus, I emphasize that to hark back to Pete's point about having that team that's there to support you. It's really hard for a kid to make a change by themselves, and so we really need the whole family to be involved in making those changes. So weight loss is not easy. We have a whole team of people that help us and help the kids to try to lose weight. But we can't move them out of their environment. We can't take them off to a ranch and make the changes there. We actually have to try to get all those changes done at home. And in order to do that, we engage in a lot of different components. There are weekly sessions. They engage in goal setting, those specific goals. We make them write it down. We have to talk about when, not just that you're going to exercise, but when are you going to do it? What are you going to do it? For how long? What time? With whom? Really specific goal setting. Self-monitoring, that measurable part, so that you know, really, are you actually making those changes? We have take-home tasks for them to do. We have the token economy, again, giving them rewards for actually making those changes. Group exercise, and we'll even visit their home if they'd like. Some actually take us up on that offer, and it seems to make a difference. So all of this is done in an effort to help a child and their family decide that they really want to make this change. And in pediatric weight management, it's a little different from adult weight management, where you definitely have a person who actually wants to be there and wants to do it, if you're dealing with an adult, many of our kids are sort of dragged in, kicking and screaming, and they'll tell us, we don't want to be here. So in the time there, we try to help them decide that maybe this is better for their health, and they really would like to make these changes. And so we do a lot of the things that have been mentioned, a lot of trying to make them make small changes. Because for pediatrics, another difference is that we don't actually want drastic, dramatic weight loss. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends between 0.5 pound and no more than 2 pounds a week of weight loss for kids, because they're still growing. So they do need to get the nutrients in order to have appropriate growth and development. So we try to keep them in there. Actually, even that's really quite hard to achieve in a child. But some of them are able to achieve it. So we make the small changes, like I was smiling earlier when we saw the plate of the fries, Outback fries, or wherever they were from. It was on a plate like this, which is a plate that has, you know, people will say there's nothing offensive about that plate. But to us, it's dreadful, because there's nothing to stop you from piling it right to the edges as high as you want. It really doesn't, it lets you eat without limits. But now we would ask parents to try and change to a plate with a border. It doesn't have to have this lovely design, but just the border, so that the inner dimension is about 9 inches or less, that the border makes you think that you're, you know, have a reasonable plate. It's not that you're eating on a saucer, but you're unlikely to put food outside of those edges. It kind of gives you a little tip to eat a more reasonable portion of whatever you should decide to put on the plate. And we do tell them that half the plate should be full of fruits and vegetables, if possible. Those, again, low energy density foods. So just making small changes like that in the environment, we hope will help. Of course, there's some environmental changes that may help, but are unlikely to occur. But over time, we think it makes a difference. I wanted to mention a couple of our patients. This is one young man who came to us at 13 years of age. His BMI, his body mass index, which I believe you all know about body mass index, it compares your height to your weight, was 67. I calculated, I calculated yours at this point, it was probably about 50. A 50 BMI. This young man's BMI was 67 when he came to us. He had severe scoliosis, so, you know, the bending and curving of the back. He had sleep apnea, difficulty breathing at night. He had diabetes type 2. This is a 13-year-old. He did not get any of that. We tried to build internal motivation. He didn't get any of that. What he did get is that his mother changed his environment. She changed the foods in the house. She changed the plates in the house. She changed everything. And over the course of his time with us, he was able to lose close to 50 pounds and reduced his BMI to 54 in that time frame. His scoliosis got better. They were going to do surgery. They didn't. His sleep apnea was better. His diabetes improved, and he was able to reduce his medications. And those are the kinds of things that we're really excited about. As Chuck mentioned, most people want to lose weight because of how they look. This is the kind of stuff that excites us as his physician, that all those medical areas got better. Now, not everybody loses weight. And this is another patient of ours, Sarah, and she actually called the Jackson Patriot to come and do this story on her. She went through our program in 6 months, didn't lose anything, stayed an extra 6 months, didn't lose anything, and ended up deciding to have bariatric surgery. And so she did undergo, she was our first patient to have weight loss surgery, and has done really well. But because we have kids who have severe illnesses that will lead them to want to have something as significant as weight loss surgery, we think it's important to really do as much as possible to help them lose weight without that. So we're always looking for different ways to impact behavior without having to, hopefully, preventing them from having to get to the point of requiring surgery. And so a recent study that I'm really excited about, I thought I would mention, is Empowered Messages study. So they come in to see us about once a week. But as far as we're concerned, that's not enough. We want more of them. So we're reaching out by sending text messages to them. So what we've done is created a computer program that we have tons of messages, like hundreds and thousands of messages on different topics. This one, say, on breakfast. And what we do is we gather data from the children about that child specifically. So we know what that child eats for breakfast, how much they like, how often they skip it, things like that. And the computer program takes those two things together and sends a text message or creates a text message that is then sent to their phone that combines the information for the child. It also, in some cases, I think we have there, we have images involved as well because they pretty much like that in the pilot study. So it's things like this that we're trying to do. One of the other things that we've done is the program I mentioned was for adolescents. But you're seeing at 13 years of age, we have kids with significant problems. So we think we're starting too late. So we've developed an Empower Junior program, which is for 7 to 11-year-olds, which we've been fortunate enough to do in conjunction with the Ann Arbor YMCA, which is wonderful because now we don't have to have the kids come into the hospital where it really wasn't convenient and they were like, being treated like patients, and there wasn't much opportunity to do really exciting things. Whereas here at the Y, they can do any of the things at the Y, basketball, swimming, etc., and it's out in the community. And we hope that as a result, we'll be able to impact their obesity at an earlier age rather than waiting until they're teens and have already developed difficulties with weight. We hope that by doing all of this, we'll have, rather than the news stories I showed you in the beginning with all those magazine covers with stories of obesity, that we'll or worsening obesity, that we'll actually get to have studies, stories like this, which is one of our patients, Nick, who lost about, at that point, I think it says that he lost 80 pounds. In the program, he lost about 60, and he's continued to lose since then. And these are the type of stories that we hope will be more common over time. Thank you very much.
So what we're going to do now is ask all our speakers to come up to the front, sit at the magic table, and I'll let Al do this because he'll do it right. And I'll walk around with the microphone and have people ask questions. I have a question. How many minutes a day of exercise should children or adults get in a general kind of way? Is there a target number? Start with you.
So I'm actually embarrassed to say, I forget exactly what. I think it's 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week is what's recommended.
For children, 60 minutes a day. And if they're actually trying to lose weight, then 90 minutes a day.
Actually, the microphone's going to be right back here. And anyone
so
who has
I'll just expand on this. There's been a couple small studies that suggest that people who exercise in the morning will do it more consistently. If they have jobs that are the 9-to-5 usual job, because by the time you get home from work, you're tired, you got to make dinner, you got to do stuff with kids, and it's really harder to fit it in. So getting up 40 minutes earlier in the morning is probably the best way to get into a routine, and actually has to be part of your life. And that's really an important thing. I think Pete mentioned that you have to sort of incorporate this sort of activity into your daily routine. It's really important.
Mention this. You know, one of the things. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Hello. I'm special or something. Thank you. You know, one of the things that you mentioned was with the exercise. The problem that I have with the studies that talk about exercise being ineffective for weight loss is they've done a very poor job at measuring certain variables. For instance, intensity. You know, typically when you have obese patients, they don't get worked out very intensely because there's a fear of injury and those kinds of things. And so when I've looked at those studies, you know, typically there was always exercise that was involved, but it was always they kept the patients in the aerobic range, and it was for an extended period of time. And that was always one of the questions, because I remember you, even as you mentioned concerning exercise and appetite. It's true, certain types of exercise, when you complete that exercise, your appetite is going to go through the roof. You know, but there are other types of exercise that you do that it's not the same way. When you're doing resistance training, you don't have that. But I was always curious, and maybe you can answer that, isn't that a separate variable? For instance, you're hungrier, but do you have to overeat the energy you just expended?
So, actually, it's a really cool question, and we actually published a couple of papers on this already, is that
you don't, excuse me, usually when you exercise, right after you exercise, actually suppresses your appetite, but later on, your appetite goes up. And so there is this transient suppression of exercise in most individuals. One of the thoughts is that when your muscles, when you do aerobic exercise and deplete your muscles of glycogen, which is the energy store in there, that there's some sort of signal that comes out that actually that increases your appetite. And looks like there's a direct correlation to the number of the number of calories that you exercise and the intensity of increasing appetite, 3 to 4 hours after you exercise. So we've never done it. We've done aerobic exercises. To my knowledge, nobody's really done it really well with resistance exercises. But usually, you don't burn quite as many calories doing resistance exercises as you do. And so this is this energy balance. How much energy do you deplete versus how much you're going to get back later?
Yeah. And that's always, again, as I mentioned, the big struggle, because it's not just resistance, but the intensity. How high is your heart rate versus all of that?
Absolutely.
Those studies just don't, I haven't seen them take that into account.
I'm wondering if anyone has a question. I'll be happy to bring you the microphone.
I'm wondering, when you talk about eat whatever you want to eat, but just count the calorie, then what about eating food that is going to help you, like anti-cancer, like antioxidants, right amount of the fiber, right amount of the protein? So where does that fall into if you just let the patient tell, eat whatever you eat, but count the calorie? So if you are eating a lot of processed food because you don't want to eat butter, you don't know what kind of the effect it is going to have on the body. So when we are thinking about weight loss, are we losing the way we should be nourishing our body?
Well,
you can
I'm
take
not
that first.
But my answer is going to be specific to pediatrics. And so we are very concerned in pediatrics about getting the right nutrients. So at the end of the day, the number of calories eaten makes the difference if we're trying to lose weight. But we are concerned that those calories that you eat should contain all the nutrients that you need to develop and grow well. And there are lots of ways to be able to do that. Your pediatrician should be able to help you. There are a number of actually websites that can give you the nutrients that are important to have at different ages. The mypyramid.gov does a really good really good job of that. So I think, yes, you're right. It is important to be sure you have the fiber and nutrients that you need as well.
So is there any dietitians in the audience? Uh-oh. So there's been actually the American Cancer Society, there was a review on nutrients and the relationship to development of cancers, which is one of the things that a lot of people talk about. That, and it's true that people who are overweight have an increased risk of certain cancers, colon cancer, breast cancer, things like that. But the real relationship between processed foods or certain types of food and the increased risk in cancer, at least, is actually the data for that is very thin. So there's been a lot of press, and it's really sort of the popular notion that increase in fiber decreases your risk of colon cancer. Turns out that that's probably not true. So when I think about food, what I think about is that I agree 100% with Susan. You got to get the nutrients. You got to get your essential fatty acids. You got to get your vitamins in. You have to have the right sort of fuels to make your body work appropriately. But in the end, it really is calories. That because it's the being overweight that really is causing you to be insulin resistant. It's causing you to increase your risk of cancer. It's causing your joints to ache. It's causing you to increase in your lipid levels and things like that. And so negative caloric balance is probably overwhelms all these other things that we talk about. Now, I'm not advocating that we should just eat Twinkies all day and that's all we need. But if you only ate 800 calories of Twinkies a day, actually you'd probably be better off.
Unfortunately.
So I'm a sort of a fatalist, and whenever I say this in front of dietitians, I apologize. There's a little bit of cringing that goes on, but having enough fruit and vegetables and things like that. There's reasons that we say those things. A lot of it probably the relationship between having more fruits and vegetables is really because they tend to be less calorically dense, and people tend to, you know, do better metabolically with less calories like that. So you know, I harp on calories more than anything because of the population that I tend to work with. We need to work on calories versus worrying about how much fiber they get in and things like that. But in the end, the data, I say this again with a little trepidation, that most of the stuff that we think we know about nutrition, you know, we really don't have a clue about.
It's interesting you mentioned that.
And we have.
It's interesting you mentioned that. One of the stories I tell is on the ranch, we had a nutritionist come in. And she sat us down. By the way, our diet, most of our diet programs were designed by our trainers, and so they vary according to trainer and all that. But our nutritionist came in, and she came in to talk to us about fiber. And, you know, there were five of us in the room. We were at least over 1,500 pounds, you know, combined or something like that. And we're listening to her, and she knew that we were tuning her out, that we had no intentions of following anything she said, because the fact of the matter is we were going to die of heart disease, not because we were backed up. You know what I mean? And literally, she left the room and never came back. So even now, when you hear stuff like the show's nutritionist and all that, yeah, okay. But one of the things you did that you mentioned earlier in your presentation was, you know, thermogenesis. We talked about that in class. You know, the digestion of food actually causes, you know, it requires your body to use energy. And so this concept of empty calories, drinking soda pop, you know, you get the straight sugar and there's no thermogenesis that happens. And so your body is not, you know, doesn't have to work to consume those foods. And so certain foods also flow through, certain macronutrients flow through the system a lot quicker than other foods do. So I'll just leave it there.
Okay, we have two more questions, and then we're going to need to end the program. But here's one right here.
I have hypothyroidism. Oprah and I, you know, we have the same thing going on. But I wonder, is regular diet and exercise, what you guys were talking about earlier, is it modified because of that? Should it be different? Should it be changed? Or would the same thing work for me?
So you said you're hypothyroid? Hyper?
Hypo.
Hypo. So I'm assuming you're replaced with thyroid hormone. Everything starts like you're a normal. You're a normal person now, as far as I'm concerned. Susan, would you disagree?
I agree. Okay. No, I agree. Totally.
I always feel like I'm taking a test when I'm sitting next to a smarter physician than I am.
No. Says the endocrinologist, yes.
This is for Dr. Wilford. I'm an elementary school teacher, and I teach art. And the gym teacher and I have been trying to figure out ways to get kids to adopt walking and other activities that could turn into lifelong exercise. So we started a walking program before school. And then we went a little bit further because we're trying to get grants to educate them on, you know, nutritional things they can do. And so I spent 15 weeks watching the kids, eating with the kids who are eating the type A school lunch. And there were so many second graders who sat and ate nothing, not the milk, not the juice, not anything. And then when snack cart got called, these are, we call them the hummingbirds, because they'd go get a fruit roll up, and then they'd continue on the rest of the day like they ate enough. Now, I'm thinking, no way. But they seem to live on it, and then parents come in and say, how can you make our kids eat their school lunch? Which we tell them we can't. They're either not hungry, and the more you force them, they're going to hate school lunch. Now, what can we do to entice them to try foods and eat foods? And if you know that, I'd bet you'd be
a millionaire.
Yeah. Just a little advice.
Well, I mean, it is such a fantastic question, and it really goes so far back before they hit second grade. So there are some studies that suggest that what a mother eats while she is pregnant affects the preferences of the child when they're 2 years old. Also, what a baby is fed, so what the mother eats when she's breastfeeding and the type of formula that a baby receives also affects their taste at age 2 and 3. So it's really important that from very early on, parents are eating the kinds of things, vegetables, those types of things, if we'd like to have their children actually enjoy that. in that whole area of early eating habits, there's so much, and it excites me so much because it's an area where we can do a lot. I think Pete mentioned, just in passing, a really quick comment, that you don't think kids, when they're very young, have the same, like they'll eat anything in front of them. And it's really true. There are studies that show that up till about 3 years of age, no matter how much you put in front of a child, they'll eat till they're full and put the rest away. After about 4 or 5, they start being influenced by how much you're actually serving them, and they will eat beyond the point that they were full. So eating practices early on are vital. What can schools do? Well, I wouldn't want to let this moment pass without mentioning the Project Healthy Schools program. I don't know if you don't know about it. Jean was here. Jean DeRussell-Weston. Oh, she had to leave. But if anybody else is here from Project Healthy Schools, wave your hands and you can, I'm not sure of the name, but there you go. You guys should touch base because they have a wonderful program for schools about nutrition and exercise. Fantastic toolkit, something that you should really look for. I think the idea of having snacks available that they can have if they skip lunch may not be the way to go there, but that's something that could be explored.
And just to follow up with that, you're mentioning that same point. I remember learning some of this from Dr. Jeff Levine, who was on the show. He serves in a population that's basically underserved. That's where his medical practice is, and he talked about what he notices, and I notice this from my culture as well, there are certain things that we say to children that cause children to overeat. For instance, eat everything that's on your plate. Well, now we're overriding that, what we talked about, that natural stop signal that they may have. And then there was one, I mentioned this, and someone else pointed out something that's even worse. She said that her mother always told her, take all you want, but eat all you take. And I thought about that. I don't know a kid in the world that doesn't have big eyes, that starts off with big eyes. But now you're forcing them to eat all that they take, and so that really sets them up. You know, I the other part of that story is I remember after the finale, I go into the hotel, and I'm there with Dr. Jeff Lee Levine, and his kids are there. And his kids are all slim. They don't suffer from his problem at all. And they look around the breakfast, you know, buffet that's there in the hotel. Nothing is ever really that good there at a breakfast buffet. I don't think they had fresh fruit that day. And they go to get the big muffins. And so they get a big muffin, they peel the bottom off and throw that away and begin to nibble on the top. Now, that's not the best, most nutritious meal. But what I would have done at their age is I would have piled up, you know, the bacon, and then I would have piled up the cheesy eggs, and I would have piled up the French toast. But because they didn't have their signals, I call it their signal, overridden when they were young, they just didn't see anything that they particularly liked. They got a little bit of this, and they were done with that, you know, done with the whole meal. And so it's that environmental thing that happens that where in that household, and you mentioned the young fellow, who the household change, you know, the household is such a major factor when you're young. Of course, that, of course, is my story as well.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just thinking that food is, like you said, it is such an innate attraction, and it is such a pleasure that maybe socially something going on this kid's home that these kids don't want to eat. Because I also know that many parents force kids to eat, or if they don't want to eat something, so that kind of situation.
Yeah. So it's probably, and Susan actually, I know, is working with Ken Rezikow, who's one of our colleagues, that, you know, different people respond to different environmental cues differently. But, you know, we all do this. You know, what's the first thing that you do when somebody comes to your house? You know, hungry? Right? We do this to our children all the time. You know, if you clean up your room, I'll take you out and get an ice cream. I mean, these are the kinds of things. But we also know, I mean, Susan mentioned it, you know, what happens in utero really makes a big difference. We do it with our rats all the time. We can make a rat lazy by just feeding the mom rat lots of food. And it's changes in how genes are expressed. It's really biology. And so part of this, you know, we think it's all the psychological things and all this kind of stuff, but there are, you know, very early on we're developing brains, and if there's different nutrient fluxes or different things coming into the brain while it's developing, it gets wired a little bit differently. And you can show that very easily in animal models. It's harder to do in humans, obviously, because they won't let us do some of the things we want to do. But
except if you're in Hollywood.
Yeah. But really, so So there's acculturation, there's genetics, there's post-genetic changes. All these things contribute, and it's all little things that are adding up to what's causing what's going on now. And the ability to get to where we are is really what it is. So, and this is one of the things that we're trying to do in our clinic, sort of personalized interventions. And not the same thing's not going to work for every person. And I think Susan realizes that and tries to target, the individual. You're doing it with the personalized messages. I think it's great. We're going to have to figure that out. But, the problem is that, it's such an overwhelming problem, and we don't really have a toolbox that's very big right now.
And I'm going to interrupt right here. We can continue the conversation on, but we need to make sure that if people do want to leave the library, check out materials, healthy books, DVDs on fitness, things like that, that you have the time to do that. I'd like to thank our speakers, Dr. Barant, Pete Thomas, Dr. Wolford, for coming here tonight. Thank you for all coming.
Congratulations.
And if you would take just a moment to finish this survey and leave that with us, we'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much.